Good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Tony Likas, and I am here representing the appellee, Amy Marshall, which this court has granted her petition for further review. The main issue in this case is how the court should treat essentially a products liability settlement that my client obtained during the marriage, but approximately 11 years before the parties were divorced. The record reflects she and Mr. Marshall received approximately $330,000. I think the record over the two-day trial will show that that amount was a painfully low amount for them, and certainly doesn't come close to covering her for the injuries. The district court awarded her a portion, approximately 54% of this award, as her non-marital property, essentially allowing her to stay in the marital home without having to buy Mr. Marshall out. On appeal, the Court of Appeals ruled that because we were unable to, at trial, present a detailed statement from that settlement showing X amount of dollars went to pain and suffering, a certain amount went to pay past medical bills, that we failed to meet our burden and that none of those proceeds should be treated as money. My main issue with the Court of Appeals decision on there is I don't think they read the party case in its entirety. This party is the main case we've got to rely on in this. And at issue in that case was a $98,000 annuity that husband had been awarded for injuries while he was working for Union Pacific. Prior settlements had already been addressed. The parties had settled that. The only issue at trial was, is any portion of that annuity non-marital? He was unable to, at trial, show any evidence that, again, X amount of dollars is traceable to pain and suffering, purely personal losses. The district court set that aside to him as his non-marital property. That was reversed by the Court of Appeals. But then this court, despite the lack of having that documentation showing a, as they called it, a tidy breakdown of every dollar spent.
Well, what taken altogether, what does the record show about the economic damages?
The economic damages, it shows it was over $1 million in Exhibit 81. It showed that she was losing for future earnings. She was earning about $43,000 a year at the time the injury occurred. She was working as a hairdresser. The record does show she really has no ability to work full-time on that. She doesn't have much use of her, pretty much the left side of her body now. She's still trying to work. She did get, the record will also show that after she suffered this injury, she began getting Social Security disability benefits that are about, I think, $1,550. So there was still some money coming in that she was bringing in during the marriage. Certainly nothing comparable to what she was prior to.
So 54% was allocated as non-marital property. Does that mean 46% of the settlement was considered marital property?
It was. Part of it was there was an investment in a gym that was approximately $37,000. That was awarded to the husband, Mr. Marshall. There was $20,000 that was put in a bank account at once. It's not entirely clear what the trial court valued that bank account at the time of the division, because at one point there was about $6,000. At trial there was, I think, maybe $600,000. That was also awarded to Mr. Marshall. Essentially the rest of it was spent. I mean, it's not like we're sitting here saying some of it went to pay off the mortgage and we've got $100,000 sitting in the account. Now it's time for the court to divvy that up. Fortunately, that money had been spent because of that settlement.
Counsel, if you're wanting property to be declared non-marital, you had the burden of showing that, correct?
Absolutely. That's.
And what, as to the settlement, what evidence can you point to in the record that you believe you met your burden with?
I believe we met our burden by Exhibit 81 was a pretty extensive exhibit that breaks down, and it contains the release that was signed by everyone. It also contains what was calculated for her future lost earnings at the time. I believe Judge Otepka, who was the district court judge, was correct in noting that he had the opportunity over a course of a two-day trial to witness how traumatized my client had been by these injuries. Witness, she had to open and close her purse with her teeth, certain things like that, and that's all within the record that shows. And I think he has the discretion, certainly under the party decision, to rule that way, because what I don't think was addressed by the Court of Appeals in this decision is, even though Mr. Hardy could not show that specific breakdown, they still awarded him that $98,500. They said over the course of the trial, he was able to convince them still. I think the Court of Appeals is focusing too much on, you have to come in with a statement that shows what the breakdown is. My point here is, that's completely unreasonable in a case like this, where somebody is injured 11 years prior to being granted a divorce. I can't imagine that she's thinking about the possibility of, okay, maybe 10 years down the road, I'm going to file for divorce. I better get things set up.
Counsel, you mentioned a few moments ago that most of these settlement proceeds were spent by the parties prior to the divorce on marital expenses. Is that right?
Well, I don't think I can classify them as marital expenses. Some of it went to pay off mortgage. There was a remodel.
Isn't that a marital expense?
Well, if I say it's a marital expense, I think I'm waiving
that's
my argument.
That's really the gist of my question. Does that matter to the characterization of these settlement proceeds under Part D? The way the parties actually used the proceeds, is that significant to us?
I don't think it is. I think if it was non-marital, that it can be traced back to, and I think that's why Judge Otepka essentially did the ruling he did with the house, because about 54% of that money went into the house, the rest of it's gone. That was the portion that he said was her non-marital and that she could keep. So,
did the trial court put percentages on it, or did the Court of Appeals put percentages on it?
The trial court put a number on it, a dollar figure. The Court of Appeals then, in making the decision, calculated that that was 54%. I don't believe in the decree that it actually says a percentage, but it does say a figure of, I think, about 175,000.
Counsel, what would your argument be if the trial judge had said, well, only 20% was non-marital of the house?
Well, my position, and it was my position in front of the Court of Appeals, is that it's discretionary to him. He could say zero of it is non-marital. He could have said 330,000 of it.
So that's my question. Would you be okay if he said 20%?
20% I think would be low. I think 50% is what we would be looking for, and the 54% is about as close as we're
going to be. Okay. Thank you.
But you have this lawsuit that you have two claims, right? One for her injuries and general and special damages, and one for the husband's loss of consortium. Isn't that the two claims that were made in the lawsuit?
Well, it never actually proceeded to a lawsuit. They settled it prior to...
Well, they settled it, but his interest would be the loss of consortium.
Well, and the release does indicate that it includes any derivative claim that Mr. Right. Mitchell would have.
Correct. So, at some point in time, what percentage of that settlement could the court allocate as non-marital property, since it wasn't done in the settlement agreement?
You mean at what point in the case can they do that?
Yeah, what could the court do with regard to allocation of the settlement as non-marital property? Because the first thing the court does in dividing property is determine what's marital and what's non-marital. Isn't that one of the first steps?
Correct.
Okay, so he's got to decide in dividing this property, what's the non-marital assets?
Correct.
Okay. So the court did that?
He did, yes. He determined that a portion of that was non-marital.
And is there any evidence that would support that percentage or any rational basis for that percentage?
Is there a document in the record that says $179,000 that he... No, I have to admit that there is on that. I think he has the discretion to, again, after a two-day trial viewing the condition that she's in, and also considering the fact that Mr. Marshall's walking out of this divorce essentially in the same position he was. He's
so
not
is this an abuse of discretion review?
It isn't. It's de novo for abuse of discretion.
Okay, correct. So you're saying that 54% of this ultimate property settlement was not, as non-marital property was not an abuse.
Does not amount to an abuse of discretion, correct. And I think that the Court of Appeals erred in saying that is, that decision by Judge Opepka amounts to an abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Roberts, good morning to you.
Morning, my name is Don Roberts. I represent Brian Marshall. As I was preparing for this oral argument, I had to think in this case how important language is, especially in our profession. It reminded me of a t-shirt I saw. The importance of a comma. Comma is very important. And there were two lines underneath it. One said, let's eat, comma, grandma. The next one said, let's eat, grandma. So I think that what we're talking about here is something that's very important, and that is the language that this court has put forth in the Party case. Because that case, it was supposed to be, as I read it, dispositive of the issue, what are we going to do with injuries that occur to a spouse during a time of the marriage, and then a subsequent divorce takes place. The language in the Party case is, I think, very clear. On page, but it says, from Party, we therefore hold that compensation for an injury that a spouse has or will receive for pain, suffering, disfigurement, disability, or loss of post-divorce earning capacity should not be equitably included in the marital estate. It then goes on to make the pronouncement. We add, however, that the burden of proof to show the property is non-marital remains with the person making the claim. Thus, in those cases where the party making the claim of non-marital property fails to prove all or portions of an injury, compensation are for purely personal losses or loss of future earnings, or future earning capacity, the presumption remains that the proceeds from that are marital property. So in this case, the issue, we have two issues below. One is the marital property and non-marital property issue of this. The other has to do with alimony, and I'll talk about that in a second. But in this case, it was their burden to establish that the injury compensation that was received was for purely personal losses or loss of future earnings.
And did the trial court essentially say, I can see what happened to this woman, I know that it should be allocated primarily to her as non-marital?
Well, it did, but again, I go back to the issue of language. You have, this court has pronounced in tracing issues for premarital property and inherited property and gifted property that you have to prove those things to a certain point. You can't just come in and say, well, this is what I think is my damage. This is my, was my property before.
So how would you do that in a divorce case?
Pardon?
How would you do that in a divorce case? Would you have a witness come in and testify that based upon the severity of her injury and the amount of recovery, that 55% of this property settlement should be considered as pain and suffering and special damages or general damages to the spouse that would therefore be considered non-marital asset?
That's actually exactly what I think needs to take place. Is they have to bring an expert in and testify. Well, in Party case, they brought in someone who testified about his loss of earnings, etc. So it certainly is, I think, incumbent upon the person who has the burden of proof to bring someone in.
Was the plaintiff's or was the wife's condition the same at the time of the settlement as it is now, or had it deteriorated?
I didn't try the case, but from the record, there was no evidence, or at least there was no statements from the court indicating that her condition had changed. What's important also, as I'd like to talk about in the Party case also in reference to this, is that in the Party case, they remained married for 5 years, and there was a loss of earning capacity during that period of time, which ate up what the court said was some of those injury proceeds. In this case, they remained married for 11.8 years after the time that this injury occurred. Reduction of income, she was making $43,000, I believe, roughly at the time of the divorce, or at the time of the injury. And as the Court of Appeals indicated, if you multiply that out over 11.8 years, that significantly exceeds the $330,000 that they received as a result of the settlement.
So your position is there's a total lack of proof in this case, and therefore you just reverse and remand for what?
I think it does because of the language that this court has set forth in the party case.
So are you going to ask for a reverse of this case and remand to the district court for further proceedings?
Not for the purposes. The Court of Appeals agreed with us. The Court of Appeals found in our favor, saying that that's a marital asset. So no, we're not asking for that part of it. On the alimony part, we were. We were asking for the court to make a different decision because the term of alimony and the amount of alimony...
Certainly considering the facts that are in the record, would that be wrong to say that none of this is a non-marital asset?
It wouldn't be wrong to say it. But
would it be equitable?
Pardon?
Would it be equitable?
It would be equitable if you had someone to come in to give the court some guidance about it. What the court just did, it basically, he said, well, they put this money down on a marital asset, the house. You asked Mr. Likas a minute ago. They used that for marital purposes. They used it for paying credit cards. They went on a trip. They did some other things with that money. So her lack of earnings was supplemented by this income that they received as a result of the settlement. She, for 11.8 years, she didn't have any income. And so everything was being supported by Mr. Marshall. He took her to and from the doctor. I mean, he did everything possible. And for the court, without having any evidence to establish how much of this should be considered as her injury, I don't think they can do it under the party decision. Now, if the party decision is changed, if that's what this court determines, then that's what this court determines. But we have to deal in the trenches with what is in front of us for the
You're saying that the Court of Appeals was correct in determining that there was no evidence to establish that any of this property was a non-marital asset.
I'm saying that there was no evidence. He abused his discretion. The district court abused his discretion because there was no evidence to give him some guideline to say how much of that should be. You talked about the derivative claim earlier. Obviously, my client, Mr. Marshall, had a derivative claim. We don't know how much that was either. Or medical bills. We don't know how much that was either.
Didn't the district court judge set off some of the personal injury settlement to the husband as non-marital property for the loss of consortium?
He did, but that's probably just as faulty as making a decision that the other part was for her injury, purely for personal injury.
So some was set off as non-marital property for the wife's pain and suffering. Some was set off as non-marital property for the husband's loss of consortium claim, and the remainder was included in the marital estate.
That's what the district court said. Correct. And I think that the Court of Appeals said, well, I don't even know that was raised as an issue on appeal by Mr. Likas as to whether or not the part that was considered Mr. Marshall's derivative claim, actually I don't believe it was part of the appeal. So I don't think we're talking about that. We're only talking about did she prove an amount that was for her personal use or her future lost wages?
Did she do that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I beg your pardon.
Did she have some evidence regarding her loss of future earnings?
Well, there was evidence that she was making $43,000 at the time of the injury. But if you take the party case and you read the next section that talks about that, it was clear in the party case that to the extent that those funds that they received represented future lost wages when the accident occurred, they were past lost wages by the time they got the divorce. So that's what I said, and that's what the Court of Appeals decided, is that during that period of 11.8 years that they still stayed married, that the money that she received, that was future at the time that she
But you're saying the future ended upon the divorce?
It ended upon the divorce.
That's your reading of party.
I think that's what party says.
Thank
exactly.
You.
Correct. And so I don't think that the... That's exactly what I believe. I think that what we're seeing here is, and Judge Otepka is a great judge. I enjoy being in front of him all the time. I didn't try this case, but I believe that what happened is he saw someone who was grievously injured, no question about it. I mean, we don't have any argument about that. And he was trying to find a way that he could get some money to her. He gave my client a 21-year alimony award. He's going to be paying alimony, unless it's reversed, until he's 65 years old.
Well, did the Court of Appeals reverse that too?
Pardon?
Didn't the Court of Appeals?
Well, they did. They did, but not to change. I think they gave him some direction, not necessarily to change the term, but to look at it, the alimony award, in context of now $6,000 instead of $7,000 a month of income. And we took issue with the amount of his income at the time of the Court of Appeals decision because we don't believe there was some double dipping.
So we may be seeing this case again.
Pardon?
We may be seeing this case again.
That's possible. Maybe like party.
Thank you very much. Do we have time
there is not.
For rebuttal? There's no time for rebuttal. Next case of the